May is Fibromyalgia Awareness Month. It's important to raise awareness about this chronic and often debilitating invisible illness known as fibromyalgia. This month-long campaign is an opportunity to educate people about the symptoms, causes, and treatments of fibromyalgia, as well as to show support for those living with these and other related invisible illnesses. Through increased awareness, we can work towards better understanding and management of fibromyalgia and ultimately improve the quality of life for those who are affected by it. And now on to this week's episode. In this week's episode, we are going to hear listener feedback and answer a question from a listener who asked for advice about abdominal migraines in her autistic child. Welcome to the podcast. Do you want to gain a better understanding of fibromyalgia through the lens of a holistic medical doctor who cares for patients from infancy, where the first symptom of chronic overlapping pain is colic, through adulthood, where the regional pain syndromes like migraines and irritable bowel syndrome can culminate into diffuse pain syndromes like fibromyalgia, POTS, and chronic fatigue syndrome? Are you looking for ways to support a loved one with one of these conditions? Or are you a healthcare professional who wants to learn more about caring for patients with these invisible illnesses but doesn't know where to start? Are you willing to learn what it's like to live with one of these debilitating conditions? My name is Dr. Michael Lenz, and in this podcast, I supplement my book, Conquering Your Fibromyalgia, Real Answers and Real Solutions for Real Pain. As a pediatrician, internist, lipidologist, and lifestyle medicine physician, I approach caring for these patients from a compassionate and evidence-based perspective. You'll hear from patients and listeners about their own experiences, learn from history about what it was like to live with these conditions in eras full of misunderstandings, and discover a holistic biopsychosocial, spiritual, and environmental approach to care with evidence-based medicine through the voices of guest experts, as well as insights from their and my own clinical experiences. Remember that while I am a doctor, I am not your doctor. All signs and symptoms should be discussed with your own individual physician. Now, on to this week's episode. This is from listener Lisa, physical therapist from Maryland. She says, Dr. Lenz and his work have been a lifeline for me. Being diagnosed with this mysterious fibromyalgia can make you feel invisible and alone. I felt as though I was left to my own devices until I found this podcast more than a year ago. Dr. Lenz has reputable professionals and fibromyalgia patients as guests on the podcast, which gives me hope to keep searching for a solution, an answer, and some direction. Of all the medical conditions Dr. Lenz could have chosen, I am grateful that he has laser-focused on conquering your fibromyalgia. Another review was from Ling. I have been struggling to find what was wrong with me, then to accept it, and now to understand it. I found this podcast and started listening to it from the beginning. I'm so glad I did. It gives you finally a perspective that you are not alone and meds are not the only solution. I thank Dr. Lenz because I emailed him with a question and within hours he called me back. You don't get that service and interest from someone that is not even your doctor. Thank you for caring. And the last review from Brewer 2025. Dr. Michael Lenz has changed the lives of our family. My 17-year-old son has been suffering from fibromyalgia for over 3 years. However, we didn't know it was fibromyalgia until about 1 year ago. And to add to that, I'm a pharmacist who initially, even after he was diagnosed with fibromyalgia, was in denial. My pharmacist training and just being a father was set on finding an exact cause of what was going on with my son and fixing it. Just to interject briefly, that's a common paradigm that most of my patients and many of their loved ones, family support, come to the medical world and trying to get help. We call that the biomedical model. And it is much more complicated that we have to look outside of a specific clear mechanical cause or inflammatory cause and to get this broader perspective or to get an appropriate perspective of complex
chronic pain or invisible illnesses like fibromyalgia. He continues, "My son was very active in sports and outdoor activities much of his life. However, after a football injury to his lower leg when he was in eighth grade, our journey began. He was complaining of general pain, not just in his leg, but throughout his whole body. He was having trouble with focusing at school. He was becoming depressed and frustrated that he was not feeling any better. To summarize our experiences, I will just list the type of doctors, specialists, and procedures we have tried. MRI of the injured knee. Trip to a children's hospital to have a bone biopsy done to rule out cancer. Lyme disease test. Visit to a pediatric rheumatology. Diagnosis of hemochromatosis. Visit to children's genetic doctor who made the diagnosis of fibromyalgia. Visit to pediatric cardiology. Visits to the chiropractor. Visits with pediatric psychologists. Mental health therapy for depression, etc. Overall, almost every test and lab came back normal. There was no explanation for why he was feeling the way he felt. Buying Dr. Lenz's book, Conquering Your Fibromyalgia, was life-changing, as it was like it was telling our story exactly. As a result, my son was diagnosed with ADHD, which I was also in denial of as a pharmacist, because my son was, until recently, has always performed well in school and didn't have symptoms of hyperactivity, etc. However, starting treatment for this has drastically improved his overall general health. Not only can he focus better, but his pain levels have greatly improved. He is getting much more restful sleep, his mood is improved, and most importantly, he is feeling normal. I waited a couple of months to post this review because I wanted to give some time to see if this therapy continued to work. I'm happy to say that we are optimistic that our son will continue to improve, as it has been almost 3 months with no need to adjust doses, etc. I can't thank Dr. Lenz for doing so much research on this severely under-recognized condition. His podcast, as well as his book, are full of useful information to help all patients who are suffering from this complicated and frustrating condition. As a fellow healthcare professional, his experience has greatly impacted my views and treatment options for this condition. Thank you, Dr. Lenz, for your dedication and expertise in helping to share your important and evolving information to all patients." Thank you so much for those kind words.
To add to that, he was referred to me by a psychiatric nurse practitioner who had been struggling to get him better and didn't have a lot of experience working with patients who had fibromyalgia, but she had read my book and listened to my podcast and referred them to me, saying, "Here's a doctor who has a strong interest in working with people who have similar struggles that he had." It's not uncommon that I have patients who've seen physicians who may not have a lot of experience or comfort managing fibromyalgia and have tried different medications, such as gabapentin, as was in his case, but was used during the daytime. And as he was still struggling, doses were escalated, which only can contribute to side effects like cognitive impairment. This can be tricky because one of the core symptoms of fibromyalgia is brain fog, and the last thing you want to do is have a medication that worsens that. With fine-tuning the timing of medications, recognizing comorbid conditions, and giving overall education and a multifaceted approach are ways that patients like this and many others are able to lessen the suffering and even reverse their levels to that of those who do not have fibromyalgia.
And if you have any questions or comments or reviews, I'd love to hear back from you, both positive and constructive comments, as well as topics or ideas like you would like to be covered on the show.
We'll take two questions here. The first is, "Dr. Lenz, I went to a rheumatologist after seeing my primary care doctor for many visits and not getting a diagnosis, and eventually did receive my fibromyalgia diagnosis by the rheumatologist. However, the rheumatologist said that she doesn't manage fibromyalgia. This left me very confused because who else am I going to go to? The doctor who made the diagnosis, I would assume, would be the one who would manage it. And why would I go back to my primary care doctor who had referred me in the beginning because they didn't know what was going on and how to manage it? Well, that's a great question, and unfortunately, it's common to hear. And unfortunately, you aren't able to come and see someone like myself who has a lot of experience. There is no board or subspecialty that is a fibromyalgia expert. It is the norm to have a rheumatologist make the diagnosis most commonly, but it is rare that they will actually actively manage it. This is similar to a physical medicine rehab doctor who may make the diagnosis, but is more attuned to use procedures and injections. I hope that with the book and the podcast, more doctors can grow in their comfort in something that they never received any education or very little education, and often, as I've talked about, is very stigmatized and misunderstood, and often are the most challenging group of patients that a primary care doctor has in their practice. This often leaves patients in no man's land, seeing many different doctors, often from multiple specialties, with other comorbid nociplastic conditions, like a GI doctor for their chronic abdominal pain syndromes. They may be seeing their GYN for dysmenorrhea or endometriosis. They may be seeing a psychiatrist for social anxiety or depression. And they may be also seeing an orthopedic doctor for chronic back pain, and nobody is taking ownership and leadership from that. My heart goes out to you and everyone else who's listening and nodding your heads now, and for all of the doctors out there who are somewhat nodding their heads. Hopefully you can grow in your understanding to take care of what I find is one of the most rewarding group of patients, because when you have someone who has had deep suffering for long periods of time and you can positively impact their life, it is so rewarding for me as a doctor, but more importantly, is so helpful for the patient who has been enduring silent, invisible suffering. And here's a second letter.
This is from Juliet. Hi, Dr. Lenz. I heard your interview on the Uniquely Human podcast. I had Dr. Barry Prezant on my podcast in the fall of 2023, if you want to listen to that, and then he had me on his podcast. She continues, and it was wonderful. I know you know this, but you are doing such important work. I am the mom of a 9-year-old kiddo with autism and ADHD. She writes that her child was diagnosed with abdominal migraines a couple of years ago. We're not new to the journey of supporting this lifestyle, but there's a lot I'd still like to understand. Your episodes with Beate Beinvogel were really great, but covered a lot of ground. I'm wondering if there are any other clinicians or resources you recommend I research to learn more about abdominal migraines. I'm sure you get a million emails, so no big deal if you never get to this. Thanks for your work. I did get a chance to reach out to Juliet and talk to her a little bit on the phone. She lives in the northeastern part of the United States. Bit of a drive to get to Boston, where Dr. Beate Beinvogel works. They do a great job of a multidisciplinary approach. And if you haven't gotten a chance to listen to the episodes, it's between episodes 81 and 83. As far as specific pamphlets or handouts, I don't have a specific pamphlet or handout, but I do discuss this a fair amount on the podcast, and I'll dive into this a little bit here as well, especially the connection between abdominal pain and autism spectrum.
Now, specifically talking about abdominal migraines. Abdominal migraines are episodic pains in the abdominal area, usually associated with nausea and vomiting. They can occur from a couple times a week to every couple months. The pain typically occurs in children before puberty, but can persist into early adulthood and sometimes even into midlife. I've had patients in their 50s who've had these cyclical episodes of previously unexplained nausea and vomiting, which are typically highly distressing. The pain is typically midline or poorly localized, moderate to severe in intensity, and associated with at least two additional features such as loss of appetite, nausea, vomiting, or pallor. Headache is not a prominent feature during attacks and may be missed if the child is not asked about it. Typically, the child will not have a lot of energy, will appear tired, not engaging in any specific exercise, often trying to close their eyes, rest with the lights off, and without any noise or TV on, maybe laying on the couch or in their bedroom. What triggers and relieves abdominal migraines? This falls under the biopsychosocial spiritual environmental model, where there are multiple factors, and it's usually an accumulation of these triggers that hit a tipping point that lead to the migraine episode. Examples include stress, tiredness or irregular sleep schedules or sleep disorders, travel, missing meals, a change in routine are examples that may trigger a migraine. Insomnia is much more common in autistic individuals, and it's important to look for coexisting medical conditions, and it is important to screen for conditions like restless leg syndrome and periodic limb movement disorder, as well as sleep apnea. It's also important to recognize that ADHD is much more common in those who are autistic than non-autistic individuals, and people with ADHD are much more likely to have insomnia because they have a hard time turning off their brain at night, regardless of whether or not they have any restless leg symptoms. Relieving factors for abdominal migraines, as with other migraines, are rest, which works in 88% of patients, sleep in 64%, and pain medications, which is helpful in about 38%. Patients with abdominal migraines often have a personal or family history of other types of migraine or similar undiagnosed episodes or nociplastic pain conditions, whether or not they were ever formally diagnosed. So, a child's parent may have fibromyalgia, they may have irritable bowel syndrome or migraines or POTS, any of those nociplastic conditions that we talk about on this podcast. How common are abdominal migraines? They affect up to 4% of children, including up to 15% of children with chronic abdominal pain. Most children stop having abdominal migraines when they go through puberty, and instead of the abdominal migraines, they develop classic migraine headaches. Diagnosing abdominal migraines is a clinical diagnosis with no confirmatory diagnostic test. Sound familiar? This is just like having fibromyalgia or other related nociplastic syndromes. You need to take a careful history, a careful physical exam to look for red flags. The important history that a child is well in between episodes versus continued unrelenting nausea and vomiting could indicate more serious problems like a brain tumor or obstruction in the intestines that are causing a problem. Or if somebody has constant malaise and worsening symptoms, that could be a sign of a kidney infection or sepsis or meningitis or other metabolic condition. Treatment starts with education, and that's why we do this episode, and we do all of the episodes on fibromyalgia and related conditions, because education is so important. So once you understand what's going on, and you then can try to maximize the lifestyle and environment. During attacks, resting in a dark, quiet room, simple pain meds like Tylenol or ibuprofen, and sumatriptan, which is a triptan or serotonin agonist nasal spray, can be helpful. There are some preventive medications to consider as we use these with other migraine conditions. Typically, we try to avoid these unless we've done everything. We've maximized lifestyle and we are still having significant breakthrough. The evidence for pharmacologic treatment of abdominal migraine is limited. In studies of pediatric migraine, resolution rates of up to 66% are reported with placebo. What about the connection between autistic individuals and those who are non-autistic and have migraines? Both people with autism and people with migraines share an atypical sensory processing. There may be hyper or hyposensory reactivity that can combine differently across autistic individuals, and it can be from mild to severe forms and be visible early in development and persist in adulthood. Sensory processing abnormalities seem to have a double impairment both in the registration and modulation of sensory stimuli. How common are migraines in those who are autistic. In one study, 43% of individuals with autism having a history of migraines over their lifetime compared to 20% of non-autistic individuals. A small study of 18 patients with autism found 61% had migraines. Gastrointestinal problems are the most frequent medical condition associated with autism, and they are highly correlated with autism severity. The most frequent symptoms are alterations in bowel habits, mainly constipation, recurrent abdominal pains, bloating, nausea or vomiting, reflux and diarrhea. These recurrent attacks often occur in the setting heightened sound or light sensitivity, and they are associated with these autonomic symptoms such as pallor and flushing. Again, this overlaps with POTS, for example, which is a classic autonomic nervous system condition. And migraines fall under the umbrella of an autonomic nervous system condition where there are the nausea or bowel symptoms. There can be the light and sound sensitivity that aren't necessarily conscious thought but are overriding or interlaced into the whole experience of distress. For those of you who are not familiar with what autism is, there are differences in both the social and communication and how people interact with the world and those around them and how they experience it. There are often are repetitive or restrictive behaviors, and there are differences in how somebody senses or experiences the world around them. So there may be heightened senses to touch, taste, smell, light, sound, differences in interoception, the awareness of our inner state of being. I will be discussing autism in much more depth on future episodes. For those who missed episode 33, it's entitled Weather-Induced Abdominal Pain in a Child, and it talks about how weather played an impact, and it wasn't just the weather. There were other factors that played a role in triggering a child's episode of unexplained abdominal pain. There also is growing research on the gut microbiome and how that has an interaction with abdominal pain syndromes in both autistic and non-autistic individuals. What they are observing is that diet can play a factor, and a diet that is full of foods that can be fermented by gut bacteria in the colon can relay back and communicate to the stomach and brainstem and brain to cause less distress. What are the foods that are favorable for creating a healthy gut biome? Those are the foods that have fiber. Those are whole plant foods. These include fruits, vegetables, whole grains, beans, peas, and lentils, and nuts and seeds. There are foods that cause more dysbiosis, and those are processed carbohydrates, animal proteins, and added oils. So that information is helpful, but how are most people living with fibromyalgia and IBS typically doing? They have a worse biome than average, and they are eating less plant food than average. The average person eating a Western diet has one fruit or vegetable a day, and those with fibromyalgia are having about half of that on average. And those who are autistic or have a child who's autistic, it makes it extra challenging because texture sensitivity is even more of an issue. A recent patient shared that she didn't like slimy foods, especially as a child. Things like that included bananas or kiwis or citrus fruit. It just was a bad texture in her mouth. Some people may find beans or peppers or celery just very intolerable. So that does create a challenge. And when you're trying to transition to a healthier diet, it's often best to start with foods they have tolerated better, and then slowly expand that over time. If the child can be involved in preparing the food ahead of time, they can be experiencing and touching that on their own schedule and at their own pace, and that will often work better, but it will likely be a longer journey than those who don't have an autistic style brain and nervous system. In one study, they did a transfer of stools from healthy people to those who had autism and chronic abdominal pain, and they showed a significant improvement in symptoms. This is called the microbiota transfer therapy.
Most people are not going to have access to this microbiota transfer therapy. It's mainly been used with severe Clostridium difficile that is unresponsive to antibiotics and works quite well. One of the take-home messages are that moving to more of a whole food plant-based diet with lots of variety is going to be more helpful in general.
Now, getting back to the original question, what are some pearls of wisdom that you can do to help your child live better? It's similar to fibromyalgia type symptoms in general, and also with finding the supports for somebody who is also autistic in your child's case. Having consistency, sameness, routine, expectation, all of the supports, avoiding autistic meltdown, autistic stress that often can precede these. Getting consistent sleep schedule is important. It's very common to have insomnia, and some of the insomnia may be related to restless leg syndrome, periodic limb movement disorder. So those definitely have to be looked at. If there is coexisting ADHD, for many, treating that can have a beneficial effect on not only their ADHD symptoms, can overall decrease the amount of stress that they're feeling and distress into their autonomic nervous system that's getting overloaded, and feeling that you can handle what's going on will hopefully lead to less problems. And also just having education and doing your best to support your child in the environment. There are medications that can be used in the acute setting, are things like ondansetron that is very effective for the nausea. That is something that has to be checked for rare heart conditions or arrhythmias that can be connected with prolonged QT intervals. All of this is done under the guidance of your doctor. There are other medications that can be considered for prevention if needed, similar to migraines. There also may be the role of triptans, especially in older children. I talked about the pain recipe. This is important to consider for your child who's going through this. And one way to look at this is keeping a simple diary of what's going on in life. What is in the biological world of things? What is the psychological world? What were the stresses going on? What was the social interactions? Was school in session? Was there a change? Was there a trip that was new that happened that took them out of their rhythm that are needed to keep them under control? Also, look at the diet. Look at exercise. Look at sleep schedule. These are things that you can look at. What is the pain recipe that seems to bring out the abdominal migraines for your child? And what are the pain recipes that seem to limit the frequency and intensity of these episodes? And if you have a pain recipe story that you'd like to share with me, I'd love to hear that from you. One of the best ways that you can help support the podcast and to get this information to others who were just like you, who were often drifting without any validation, without any good evidence-based holistic medicine to help you understand what is going on. And the ways you can do that is by sharing this with others, hitting the like and follow button, leaving a 5-star rating and review. Until next week, go Team Fibro.